Hey everyone, it is Kyle Flaherty of Security Nation, episode 22. It is with Chris Littleberry. So Chris is someone who has been doing pen testing, security assessment, security testing in general for years. And so I wanted to have him on the podcast to actually talk about why does he do that? Why does he have a passion for it? What kind of drives him to do that? The word creativity continues to come up when we talk to folks like this. But he really talks about, you know, because he was at the DOD, then he became a pen tester. So he has kind of a unique background and talks a lot about not only the ins and outs of the testing and the security assessment and stuff like that, but how do you scope that out? How do you know what you actually need as a company? Do you need the full bore red team, or do you need kind of a more maturity model? And then you move into maybe a more, you know, simplistic pen test, and you kind of move up the chain when it comes to that. So we spent a lot of time talking about what companies and people should look for when it comes to these assessments and these testing scenarios. We also spent some time talking about just what it takes to do this. And that's what I love about these podcasts. I love sitting and talking to these folks that are kind of on the front lines, boots on the street, boots, you know, in the middle of your office, maybe unexpectedly, that are finding this stuff out about you and your security and what you need to do better. And then we talked a little bit about how you can then communicate that to not only management, we talk a lot about that, but the employees, so that they know that this stuff's being done and why, including, you know, password management and phishing and all of the education that has to go into this. And this stuff won't go away no matter what tools we have, no matter what technology we develop. Getting to the user is of utmost importance. It's why attackers try to get to the user. It's why pen testers try to get to the user. And it's why we as security professionals have to get to the user when it comes to education and all those things. So it was great. Not only is Chris just a fantastic guest and someone that I can't wait to have on more and actually go into a little bit more depth, but he by far has the best podcast voice of any of the guests that we've had, as well as he has the first shout out in the history of Security Nation. So sit back, enjoy episode 22. Of the pod with Chris Littleberry.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
I can hear you okay. No, it's perfect. Where are you today? You're in DC area?
I'm actually out in Colorado right now.
Oh, all right. Cool. Well, that's a nice area to be in these days.
Yeah, it is.
Especially if you're a skier.
Haven't in a long time.
Yeah. I know, we got a little bit of snow. I'm getting used to it because we just moved back from Austin, actually, after 10 years of not being in New England. And so now I'm getting used to it again. So, but that's
back
all right.
Back to shoveling.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's no big deal. So actually, the first thing I kind of wanted to talk about was what got you into, so, you know, I looked at your LinkedIn, I looked at, you know, and notoriously for people in security, there's not much out there. But like, what was your kind of genesis story of getting into the security realm?
So my background's from the DOD, and so that's where I got my start. And it was kind of hammered into us there that, you know, you don't promote yourself on the outside. So I didn't have a LinkedIn. You know, I didn't really have much at all. And I guess I ended up being discovered, if you want to call it that, because I was auditing a class that my now director was teaching at the time. And so, you know, we talked after class, and I had some questions for him because it was the first time I had had access to somebody with that kind of knowledge. So I had a whole bunch of questions on reversing binary analysis and things like that. Stuff that I just hadn't really had a lot of exposure to. And so we kept in touch. And then about, I don't know, a year later, he had moved into a position with a company and was building up a pen testing team and asked me if I wanted to join. So I left the DOD and ventured into the private sector.
And when you had gone, you know, when you went to the DOD, and I know that you were there for almost a decade, was it security from the get-go? Or was that something that you kind of walked into over time?
So I actually enlisted in the Air Force, so I was active duty military.
Awesome.
And I was actually wanting to get out of computers for a while. Before I joined, I was working at IBM, and I was doing help desk for them, so internal help desk and server admin and things like that. And it kind of burned me out a bit, and so I needed a change. And so I thought, signals intelligence analyst, that looks like a cool job. I'll go do that. And so I joined up and went through the training, got my clearance, and then they discovered I had a computer background, and so they put me on a fast track for computer network exploitation and operations. And halfway through, I had an opportunity to go join an organization there within the agency that was really kind of the springboard for the next step of that. And if I can, I want to give a shout out to Phyllis Parra for that. She was my flight sergeant at the time and really made that happen. And it was a great springboard for next steps, and I learned a ton. And kind of made me where I am now.
Yeah, and that may be the first shout out in the History of Security Nation podcast. So that, I mean, right there, you're breaking new ground.
Fair enough.
And I know I'm already going to hear a bunch of people be like, hey, yeah, that pod with Chris was great, but he is a way better voice for podcasting than you do, Kyle.
Oh, it helps on client calls.
I love it. So, you know, one of the things that I find really interesting about folks like yourselves who've kind of gone on this path, and I'll ask you kind of a similar question to what I've asked other folks that we've had, is, you know, because then, you know, you left the DoD and really started getting into penetration testing. And I want to talk about that and what that means and why you do what you do. But were you always someone who just liked to break stuff? Were you like the kid who didn't want to put together the Legos? You wanted to break the whole thing apart and then rebuild it. Do you have that similar type of gene, I guess?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody on the team does. Yeah. We have a whole bunch of guys that probably as kids took things apart, and then, some of us couldn't put them back together again. But, at least we learned from the process. But, everybody on the team has a very kind of inquisitive mind and, isn't afraid to break things and figure out what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it does amaze me that whole need for curiosity. And I had one of a CISO at Elginol on a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how when he goes to look for good security talent, and we all know the story about how hard it is to find folks, but he was kind of taking a different approach of like, well, yeah, you don't always look for the people with all the certs and all the different types of long history in it. It's like, just find someone super creative who questions a lot of things. And he actually, one of his best hires he was talking about was this guy he met who was pumping gas at a gas station in Florida. And he got to know him over the years because he always went and got gas there. And the guy was just always taking apart stuff. Had nothing to do with computers or security. And that guy now has been in security for like 20 years, doing really well from everything he was saying. So there's just that knack for figuring out whether someone has that level of curiosity.
Absolutely. And the drive for it too. There's a few examples that are popping in my head, but some of the most successful folks that I've known, they just get they get a concept in their head of something that they don't understand, or something that hey, no one's done this before, why haven't they? And then they just kind of go head down, put on blinders, and then they surface at 3 a.m. and like, oh man, I should probably get to sleep, huh? And it's kind of rinse and repeat until they've completely mastered it. And I know some folks that do that, and like, in a week's time, they're like, hey, check this out. This is something I put together real quick. What do you think of it? And, I take a look at it and I'm like, this is, beyond comprehensive. Like I need some time to digest this and understand what's going on. And, that mindset is really so successful in this field because, especially with pen testing, you'll come across a scenario where like, I know this should work. This, I should be able to get into this. Why isn't this working? Or, I feel that there's something here. Why, I just have a gut feeling I can do this. And then, next thing you know, it's, it's late at night and you've put a couple hours into it, and then suddenly, you know, yeah, you get that shell, or you get that that piece of data you're going after.
Yeah, it's that itch that, you know, you got to scratch, and you just figure out how to do it. So then you move into kind of the penetration testing arena. You met someone to kind of help guide you into that that realm. But what's compelling about that? I mean, you're still doing it, you know, and you're still helping kind of companies figure all this stuff out and helping other people become pen testers, etc. But what to you keeps you excited about that?
Me personally, I really enjoy the team I'm working on. Having been a pen tester and, you know, been the boots on the ground and going to client sites and being the, you know, the on the road consultant for a number of years, you know, I know what it's like and I know what the challenges are. And so now that I'm a manager of the team and I'm involved with scoping of engagements and, basically the day-to-day operations of it, I get to take part in that, that piece of, you know, when you're on the ground, be like, hey, you know, I wish it was done this way, or, you know, I wish that there was somebody looking out for X, Y, Z. And now I'm in a position to do that. And, I really enjoy it. And I mean, the team of guys we have is, guys and girls is just fantastic. And to be able to, you know, enable them to, for lack of better words, do their job and stay out of their way.
Yeah. So I have that kind of, furiously writing, because that kind of brought up a few questions for me. You mentioned challenges let's start actually challenges of when you were boots on the ground. What are those challenges? So if I'm looking to get into this, what should I expect to be challenged by?
I would say just be adaptable. You know, we've had times where engagements are sold and, you know, everything is good to go, but there was something that was just missing, some, you know, piece of information that was that either wasn't passed along or wasn't communicated properly. And so now, you know, you're the consultant on site, and it's like, hey, we have these expectations, and those weren't, you know, exactly communicated early on. And so, okay, well, you know, let's make this happen, and let's, you know, roll with what the requirements are, and you know, make sure the client gets what they need, and you know, everybody is satisfied in the end.
Is there a challenge to, I mean, there's a lot of management too of people. So you're doing your job anyhow, right? Mm-hmm. But then you're managing the client and the customer and trying to figure that out. What are kind of ways to have better communication between the customer and yourself?
So we have some fantastic project managers. They're just, I've been working with them for a while. One of them I've been working with for off and on for about 4 years now, and they're just phenomenal. But the big thing that that I try to do is get involved early on in the pre-sales and the pre-scoping of things, because some clients will come to us and they'll say, they'll say, okay, you know, I need X, Y, Z done. This is what we have. This is what the environment looks like. This is my time frame. Can you meet these, you know, these objectives? And, you know, that's easy. You know, we can scope that out. We can get a statement of work done, and then, you know, boom, we're good to go. Then we have some clients that maybe haven't had a pen test done before, and they're approaching it because they're just really, they're not sure what they need. And, you know, they're not really sure how they stack up in the grand scheme of things. We get a lot of clients that are asking, you know, hey, I'm in manufacturing. Maybe it's, you know, industrial manufacturing. What are the other folks in the same kind of industry, in that same silo? You know, what's their security look like? How do we stack up, and how can we improve it? So being able to have that, those discussions with them early on and say, okay, you know, let's take a look at what you have, how things are set up, and really what would be the most effective for you, and, kind of get the most actionable, information for you. So for example, if you have some organization that's never had a pen test before and never really had any sort of security audit whatsoever, it wouldn't make sense for us to come in and do, you know, like a red team engagement where we're being super stealthy and you don't know we're there, and it's, you know, low and slow and just blending into the environment and trying to be in and out without anybody noticing. I mean, it's something we're very good at, and a lot of organizations are wanting that, but it wouldn't be applicable to, you know, an organization just starting out to try to lock themselves down. Whereas if we can come in and do a pen test and a maturity assessment and just kind of take, you know, holistic approach to it and say, okay, you know, here's your gaps. Maybe, you know, here's some configuration things you haven't taken into account, and just kind of get them on the right track. And then later on, if they want to do something like a red team engagement or something more precision, we can do that.
So it falls along with the maturity of the organization. And that doesn't just mean size of the organization. It could be
exactly.
Just, yeah. And it's funny how you said just, you know, you're talking about a manufacturing vertical, but do you see, you know, because you've done hundreds of these, are there verticals that particularly stand out to you who need, you know, red team versus just the maturity assessment? Are there just kind of trends that you've noticed over time?
I would say healthcare and financial institutions. They're always the ones that are kind of in the crosshairs. I mean, they're always under scrutiny, and not to say if one company was compromised that it would be less of an impact or less of a bad thing, or you know, I'm not trying to weigh who's more important in the industry, but there's a lot more to lose if you know, a healthcare organization or a financial institution has all their data compromised.
Right.
You know, that makes national news, and you know, it can ruin an organization.
Well, on the flip side, there's, you know, looking at it from the attacker's point of view, there's a lot more to gain by going after those guys too, because
absolutely,
that's data that I can sell. I mean, that's the follow the money type of scenario for sure.
But I mean, I've also had some organizations where I'm trying to think of a sanitized way to describe their industry. But you know, you come in and you're like, okay, you know, let's take a look, and they are just some of the most locked down I've ever seen. It's like, you know, good on you. I mean, it's not that it's, you know, you aren't at risk and you shouldn't be having a security posture like this, but the fact that you've gone, you know, so above and beyond. In an industry that maybe isn't in the spotlight like something like healthcare is. And those clients are so fun to work with because it's, you know, it's challenging. Yeah. And our guys enjoy it too because it's, you know, it's a good challenge.
So, all right. So that brings up an interesting thing of, so we talked a little bit about the curiosity gene or DNA that y'all have, you know, when you get into this line of business. But the flip side of that customer that you went in, and they have things locked down and they're great to work with and all that stuff. Not that others aren't great to work with. But what is it about them that made them so, lack of a better word, mature or smart when it comes to actually locking this stuff down, even when potentially they didn't really have to go that far?
As far as like a driving reason or what was it that enabled
that? Yeah, I mean, what's in their DNA to make sure that they're doing that? Because here's the reason I ask it is we talk all about, and we could sit here and talk about all the stories of how you got past, you know, different systems and you actually penetrated and all those different types of things. And we talk about those things a lot because they're fun and sexy. The company that locked it all down was cool, but in your voice, the respect level was really high. And so I wonder what people could look for out of their own people to make sure that they're the same type of scenario that you just talked about.
I would say the common denominator in the really successful ones is where top-down management is all on board. It's not necessarily that, you know, they're draconian about security. It's more of that they care. They honestly care, and they've enabled their people. And that's, you know, it's they don't have to dedicate their entire budget to it, but it had, you know, it's something that's taken seriously, and the user awareness training and things like, you know, regular phishing engagements within its own company, and also ones that have really good reporting instructions in place. So if something goes wrong, if, you know, there's something up with your computer, if you think that you've been hacked or, you know, your workstation's been compromised, let IT know, and there's a guarantee that you won't get in trouble. So that's, you know, it's encouraged that if you think something's wrong, you know, here it is in writing. You're not going to get fired for it. If, you know, for whatever reason, if you clicked on that link in the email that you shouldn't have, or if you clicked on it, then put in credentials somewhere and you shouldn't have, and, you know, you're concerned, let us know and we'll take care of it and you won't be fired for it. And, the organizations that have that kind of mindset where it's, you know, we're all in this together, and they're really good at conveying, you know, not just what needs to be done, but why, and kind of getting that buy-in from everybody, you know, all the employees, because nobody wants to, you know, change their password every 90 days and have it be, you know, 30 characters long and can't contain words. And, you know, we've all been there.
Right.
But, you know, when they have great user awareness training and they go into, you know, here's why you want to have a password like that. You know, here's why this password that you think would be really secure is actually completely insecure. And, you know, on our last pen test, we discovered, you know, 26 of you are using this same password. And and again, it's, you know, anonymous. It's not shaming anybody. It's not throwing anybody under the bus, but just being honest with their security, their posture, and how their people go about, you know, implementing their policies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point of view, because I think that really what you're saying too is you need a culture that people feel safe when it comes to that stuff, but also in your line of work and in just pen testers in general, is how they use the information you give them. So it kind of bubbles up to what you're talking about of scoping that project and figuring out what they actually need, because the way they use that data could be really beneficial for them, obviously from a, you know, in terms of just hardening, you know, and minimizing risk, but also actually pushing it down to the employees themselves to understand what happened and why it was important.
Absolutely. And kind of on the other side of that coin, one of my favorite engagements that I was on was a company where the upper management really didn't, I don't want to say they didn't care about security, but it wasn't a priority to them. They started out as a small mom and pop organization and then got really large. And their mindset of it just didn't scale. And so they brought in a CISO, and she, you know, looked at everything, was like, wow, we need a pen test. We need, you know, X, Y, and Z. And they're like, no, we really don't. We're fine. You know, we've gone this far without it. And so we'll be just fine. And so she convinced them to bring us in and just do kind of a limited engagement. And so we came in and we, you know, we got domain administrator. We just took, you know, full control of the network and the whole thing. And I'll never forget, we did an on-site debrief. And so I got to the conference room a little bit early, and she was there, and she was kind of doing this little dance. And I was like, oh, it's, you know, good day, huh? And she's like, no, this is my happy dance. You have no idea the kind of funding I'm going to get after this. And but I mean, it was great to be able to provide that actionable information, the, you know, the proof. And it's like, this is why you should care. You know, here's screenshots of you know, the CEO on his email. You know, here's proprietary data that we wouldn't want you know, anybody outside the company to see, and, you know, financials and things like that, and be able to provide those folks that kind of information to put in front of decision makers and really drive what the, you know, the security looks like in the organization.
When you were, you know, either when you were, you know, to use your words, kind of boots on the ground, but also, you know, the team that you have now and all of those folks, what are just some go-to things in their toolkits, their tool belt that you would recommend to people?
As far as from a penetration testing standpoint or a hardening against us standpoint?
I would say a penetration testing standpoint.
Always go after the users. I mean, I would joke that, you know, summer 2016 was a great time because, you know, you go try to guess the password, summer 2016 with a capital S, and it meets most password complexity requirements. And, you know, the folks that have to change every, you know, 90 or, you know, however many days, it's super common for them to either do the month and, you know, the year or the season and the year. And yeah. So we'll always attack the users. And even if we don't have enumerated users, we'll do just guessing based off of census data. And so we'll build a user list of like 26,000 users and then see who has, you know, summer 2016. And usually we'll get one or two, and that'll provide us that initial foothold.
Right.
So it, yeah, that's always a fun one.
And when you kind of go out and try to hire people and find people for your team, et cetera, what you know, obviously we talked about being creative, we talked about that stuff, but what are some of the other things that you're always looking for out of a good pen tester?
Well, kind of the variety of experience and the background is always always a plus. You know, if somebody's interviewing and they've never done never done consulting work, if they've just done maybe web application security, then maybe we can hire them on our analyst program, or maybe we can have a spot for them. But we want somebody that's that has experience in not just doing internal external, but also can do web apps, can do wireless testing, and really has a passion for it. Because I mean, there's plenty of folks out there that have a bunch of certifications and they look great on paper, but it's just I don't know, I'm good. I run my company's security program and we're good. I do scans. Things things get locked down. We're good at patching. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. But then you get that one kid like we were talking about earlier that's like, yeah, I had this project where there was this a CVE and there wasn't any public exploit code for it, and so I was like, man, I want to figure this out, and they start talking through their process with that and just kind of how passionate they were about it, or some sort of research project or some sort of just kind of scenario within what their world is right now, and just how they get excited about it, how they go down that rabbit hole of learning new things and just that drive.
What has been, obviously a lot has changed in the years that you've been in the industry, specific, to pen testing and security assessments and whatnot. But I'd ask, what was your favorite con back then? And what's your favorite con now? And has that changed?
As far as conferences?
Yeah.
To be honest, I haven't been to a lot of them. I've just been to Black Hat and DEF CON mostly.
All right.
I mean, they're... yeah, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it, but it kind of seems like Black Hat has become the new RSA, and DEF CON has become the new Black Hat.
There you go.
And
DerbyCon's become the new DEF CON.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what we hear. That's why I ask that. It's always one of the things we actually get asked a lot in response to this podcast specifically are, where should I go? What should I, and it doesn't have to be a conference. It could be a community. It could be a website. It could be other things. But if it's not DEF CON, if it's not, those types of things, where would you suggest someone looking to learn about all these things kind of goes?
I always recommend look at meetups, like meetup.com. Most major cities have some sort of security meetup. Go to one of those and just kind of, meet people there and watch presentations and just see what other people are doing and kind of get a feel for the group. There's a really strong one in Austin.
Yeah.
And there's just some incredibly smart people that show up to these, and it's not as formal. It's not, somebody standing up, in front of a podium in front of 1,000 people at Black Hat. It's, a room with maybe 30 people.
Yep.
And somebody talking about the research that they've done, or, something that they've discovered. And I don't know. I like that more kind of intimate setting where, you can ask questions, you can have it be an interactive experience. And, ultimately if you have something to present, you're contributing back.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, and I know the Austin group really well. So that's, those are the people who taught me probably 90% of what I know. And that's 10% of what they know. And they're always open to doing that, which is what I love about those groups kind of in particular, for sure. What to you, and this will be we're hitting the half hour, and it went by quickly, but I would ask kind of to wrap up, what's changed in kind of for you in terms of the security world? What are things that you're seeing differently, whether it's from the clients and customers you're working with or from your own kind of tips and tricks and tools and how you kind of do your job?
So I think one of the easiest answers to that is we're seeing a lot more of, Internet of Things. So companies are scrambling to be first to market, to have the first, Internet-enabled toaster and things like that. And, those devices are bringing new security challenges with them. And so we're having a lot of companies hitting us up and be like, hey, you know, we're thinking about putting this this device out. Can you guys test it? And that's not something that was really prevalent, a number of years back.
Yeah.
And so kind of having that that requirement and that skill set for folks to be able to test that, whether it be, purely network based or actually taking the thing apart and looking at the hardware. You know, it's a skill set that wasn't as in demand as it is now. And then from a pen testing perspective, user behavior analytics are a big thing now. And that's some of them that are tuned properly. You know, you can catch bad guys quickly. You can catch us rather quickly.
Yep.
And trying to evade those and work around those is something that's again wasn't as prevalent a handful of years back.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a new one. But that's interesting that you're seeing more of those.
We're not seeing a ton, but we're seeing more.
Good.
Whereas before, I can remember I went up against maybe like one a year. And now it's, becoming a lot more prevalent.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, and the IoT one, it is amazing, just even from our standpoint, as we look at analytics and stuff like that, the amount of people that are seemingly searching for IoT security testing or looking, and it makes my cynical heart feel a little bit better. that maybe people are actually thinking about this stuff more. So that's a good thing. And proactively, not just in relation to maybe compliance or, they already got hit and they're trying to kind of clean up a mess. It does seem like they're maybe getting ahead of it in some cases. The challenge, I think, is going to be, you mentioned, a connected toaster, which I would love. I'm not really sure what it would do for me, but there's just so many of them, and it's not even like as big as a toy. It's all the sensors that could be on manufacturing.
Absolutely. And we're seeing a lot of it in transportation industry too.
Oh,
and, we have Craig Smith who, is running our, that guy's crazy smart.
Well, and you're like advertising for, I think he'll be on the pod next after this one goes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
He's just, like I said, he literally wrote the book on car hacking.
Right, exactly.
And it's really fun too to get on those scoping calls with clients where they're, hey, I do have that internet enabled toaster. What do I need to consider with this? What's my exposure look like, and what can you guys do for us? And it's fun. It's still fun because then, we scope it out, and then I hop on the team chat and be like, hey guys, I just scoped a an internet, connected toaster.
Oh, they must love that.
Yeah, and it's we get the opportunity to do such, for lack of better words, cool things.
Yep.
It's not just the standard. Not that there's anything wrong with doing a standard internal external pen test, but we have such an opportunity to do just all this out of the box type testing that it is really fun, and it satisfies that curiosity that everybody on the team has.
Yeah, still scratching the itch after all these years.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good thing.
You got to keep it interesting, right?
I know. Awesome. Well, Chris, I really appreciate the time. These are always, I think, the more entertaining ones, at least for me, and certainly from what we hear from the audience, when we have folks like yourself who have really done a lot of this stuff and who are out there helping the community and helping each other get better at all of this stuff. So we appreciate the time.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Well, hopefully at some point I'll see you in person.
Yeah. I'm trying to get out to Boston more, but yeah.
Well, we should forget that. Let's meet up in Austin.
There you go.
It's much better.
Tacos run me.
Exactly right. That's all I care about. It's what I miss most.
Yeah, awesome. Well, appreciate that.
Enjoy the day, and thank you so much again.
You too, sir. Yeah, right. Good one.
Bye, Chris.